Good morning and welcome. We have Dr. Woody Franklin in studio, straight up 9:30 on a Monday morning. Dr. Woody, good morning. It's always nice to see you.
Hey Bob, how are you?
Not bad. What's new and exciting?
Oh, pretty much the same old thing. Winter's coming up.
I hate to even think about it, but it's been so nice, with the exception of maybe a little wind on Saturday.
Oh, yeah.
I would imagine you were probably busy with the pheasant season or opener and maybe some dogs out there. It was so hot anyway. But
right. Yeah, I was glad for that.
There's always barbed wire incidents and maybe a little bird shot you have to pick out. So
had some upper respiratory stuff and this and that. It's always something there.
Yeah, you know, we were talking off mic about it was bath day at the house yesterday because I had the garden hose out there. So I washed up the dogs. And true to form, I turned my back on Juan and there he's out rolling in the driveway. So it's like, are you serious, you know? I don't know. I grumble and complain and laugh sometimes about these dogs of mine. But honestly, truth is, what would I do without them? You know, really, they're like members of the family. They're like crazy Uncle Eddie that lives up in the attic. You know, you grumble because he's up there, but you'd miss him if he was gone, right?
You have to start bathing the chickens.
That'll be next. Well, we certainly do want to thank our listeners for their questions. We would welcome anybody out there that'd like to put one forth to you. The opportunity to do so, you can call 692-1430. We have Aaron standing by. And want to make sure before we begin, let folks know they can certainly refer to your website, which is brookingsanimalclinic.com, all one word, small case letters. We have programs archived on there, and lots of really good advice and tips.
Well, we hope.
Yeah, really you do.
Yeah. We hope so.
Sometimes, having a pet is like having a child, okay? So expectant parents really don't know what to expect. If you are bringing home that puppy for the first time, you come home with a whole box full of things that they need. You've got squeak toys, and you've got this and that, and a blanket, and a doggy dish, and all these things. You just have to love them and watch out for them, and you know. But it's an experience.
Oh, yeah.
And it's a learning experience.
Yeah.
And that's why you come in here to share with us your menu. How long have you been doing this, Dr. Woody?
45 years.
Isn't that something?
It's amazing to me.
Time goes by fast.
Oh, boy.
Have you seen a lot of changes in the profession?
Yeah, tremendous.
I wish that Prairie Public would revisit those great old episodes of All Creatures Great and Small.
Oh, they were James. Fun,
they were. Yeah. You know, and I've got the old hardcover books someplace. I should dig out and reread them this winter.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's just such a great story that this gentleman had, and what a great life that
you
he
bet.
Had.
Yep.
Well, Dr. Woody, we're going to get right to it. A lady has written in. She said, I really want to dress my pet up for Halloween, but I wonder, is it safe to do this? Now, are there costumes I should stay away from because maybe it would harm the pet?
30 million people will spend $500 million on pet costumes for Halloween. Just amazes me. The trouble that we have with them, first of all, the pets won't leave them on or leave them alone. You know, the cats, you put a hat on a cat and chews the strap off and runs under the bed. And that's okay, man. That's what you want to do. It's okay. The bigger concern that I have is that a lot of these things are made in places like China and Mexico. And the dyes and I think some of the materials can be allergenic to pets. So if you've got a costume you're considering, particularly if you're trying to make it yourself with materials you already have, tie some of that on the pet before you even make the costume and see if he has a reaction to it. Because that's the biggest trouble we have. You know, pets will break out. They'll get these big wheals and swollen spots. And, of course, the obvious things like if you want little Fluffy dressed up as a butterfly, don't have wire in the wings, you know, that she can poke herself with or the other dog or whatever. Those things are kind of self-explanatory, but the materials they're made of seems to be the biggest problem with this stuff.
So you mean Tijuana asbestos probably isn't the best?
Well, I had a guy here last fall. He was watching TV. He was watching a Vikings game. He had a boxer, and he had one of these purple Vikings covers.
Sure.
And the dog just... It was like an old sow with erysipelas, just big diamond-shaped welts all over this dog. So we treated it, and he called me up about the third quarter, and he said, I think I know what's wrong with the dog. And I said, what's wrong? He said, well, I had it under this throw, and where the throw is on the dog, it's all welded up again. So there's something either in the dye
or the material.
The material of that thing, and I suppose it's made in Taiwan or something, yeah. I don't know.
Wow.
That is, you know, the dog had hypersensitivity to.
Or the dog has enough sense not to root for the Vikings.
Well,
he would have been Green Bay, would have been okay. But it is funny to me how sensitive that they are, you know. And even if you're, like, for me, giving the dog a bath, I used Johnson's baby shampoo. I just dumped some of that in a bucket and got a good layer of suds going on. Yeah. Didn't seem to bother him.
Yeah, those are pretty hypoallergenic. Ivory soap works well, too.
I like the smell of ivory.
Yeah. Makes it nice and clean.
Yeah, it does, yeah. And you don't have to fumble around for the soap because it floats.
Yeah.
Dr. Woody, now, I have heard that pumpkin is good for a dog. I've got a 2-year-old teacup Yorkie. Can she have a little bit of leftover pumpkin dessert?
The kick in that question is the dessert part. Pumpkin by itself is just fine for dogs. And we do have some dogs that have a fiber response of colitis, where if you don't give them some kind of fiber, they'll have a loose stool. Sort of paradoxical. But when you talk about dessert, you're generally talking about sugar.
Oh,
brown sugar,
yeah.
Whipped cream,
yeah. Corn
honey,
syrup,
whatever
stuff.
It is.
Yeah.
And that's the part that's the kick for particularly little dogs. That can aggravate the pancreas, and it's not a good plan.
So give them some pumpkin before you make the pumpkin pie dessert.
Yeah, when you make the dessert, uncork a can and give them a teaspoon. It's just fine. They like it.
What about the jack-o'-lanterns we have sitting on the back step that they get all soft and mushy because they've been frozen?
It's okay unless they're moldy.
Okay.
And this is going to be, I think, a terrible year for aflatoxin.
Which is what?
It's a mold. And I was talking to a guy the other day that does some swine stuff, and he said that they're starting to get feed from the elevator that starts to smell moldy.
Really?
Corn.
Is that right?
Yeah. And I remember years ago we had it in cows, and it's just an absolute reproductive disaster. These cows that abort and the whole bit.
So is it like regular mold that you can see fuzzy, white, or green, or blue?
You can't necessarily see it. And it's the toxin from the mold that's the aggravating factor. So theoretically, if the mold hadn't been there long enough to make it toxin, it wouldn't be a problem. But how do you know?
Sure.
And I remember years ago when we had problems with it, they did a survey in Kansas City, and they went on grocery store shelves and picked up cornmeal, and they found aflatoxin in 65% of the samples.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
Really?
So it's one of those things where if you got an old rotten black pumpkin, you better find
just
a place
chunk
for that.
It. Yeah.
But if it's just frozen and kind of soft, doesn't bother.
You know, there's a pumpkin patch east of town. Maybe you've seen that. It's on the north side of Highway 14. It amazes me how prolific in a little bit of land. The guy had just, look, a rock pile of pumpkins out there. It's like, wow.
Yeah. Amazing.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
My sister-in-law really wants a cat, Dr. Woody. However, she's allergic to cat hair. Now, I know that there may be some cats out there that have little or no hair. What could you suggest that would be a good breed for my sister-in-law to have?
Well, cat allergy or human allergy to cats is classically considered to be dander, the scurf and crud that comes off the cat. But they're beginning to think now that saliva may play as much of a role or more in some cases as the dander.
Cats lick themselves.
The cat, well, yeah, or they lick you or whatever it is. So I don't know where that lies, but that's something to consider. The breeds they talk about for hypoallergenicity in cats include the what they call a sphinx cat, the hairless cat. No hair at all.
I've seen those.
If you can stand that.
Yeah.
Any of the Rexes, Devon Rex, Russian Blues are good. Even the Bengal cat is considered hypoallergenic. So there are several of them out there that aren't too bad. They all have their individual personality, breed characteristics, but those are some of the animals you could get by with. But I guess one of the cautions, if there's a question about is it dander or is it saliva, is don't let them lick you if you're allergic. And see where that takes you. That might help you along quite a ways. Particularly if you get one of these hypoallergenic or hairless.
It surprises me that a person that's allergic to cats would want to get one, you know?
Yeah, well, some people are just attracted even because of their allergies. And I've seen cases where people become desensitized to cats. They'll move in with somebody that has a cat, and, you know, 5 years later, they aren't sniffling anymore. So whether it's just a constant exposure to desensitization, I don't know. But it does happen that way.
Sure. A happy ending to a story.
Yeah, absolutely.
Dr. Woody, I am taking my pointer out for his first ever hunt. And I know that he can go through some pretty tough terrain, and there's water. Anything that I should worry about as far as preventative things we can do to make sure he doesn't get sick or injured?
Well, of course, keep the vaccines up to date. If you're going out with other dogs or he's going to be around other dogs, you ought to consider kennel cough vaccination. And as far as the dog, actually, the hunt itself, biggest thing I see with dogs is laceration from either a barbed wire or something in the weeds they didn't see, or a stick, or sometimes a cattail will get stuck under the skin, you know, for 6 inches. Get them a vest. Get one
a
of those
vest.
Vests
sure.
They have that can put on. And the classic is right here where the arm joins the chest. That's the spot where they seem to always get ripped.
What about eyes?
Occasional eye injuries, but much less common than the laceration and the chest particularly.
You know, that's really a good idea if you think about it.
Yeah.
They could wear a blaze orange
yeah.
hunting vest
Absolutely.
So that they're visible.
Yep.
And
it blocks a lot of those weeds and grass and stuff that rip them up.
You know, you're so right about that, too, because hunting out on the West River with a friend of mine had a lab, Keita, and such a good dog she was, but they had barbed wire fences. And,
yeah.
of course, the dog goes between the barbed wire strands
yep.
and got hooked and really got a yep. nasty tear.
You bet.
Would not stop wanting to hunt,
yeah.
you know, just
yeah.
wanted to go, go, go.
Yep.
And what about jumping in water? You know, this time of year, there's some pretty icky, cruddy water out there. Should a person kind of, you know, a lot of times they can't help themselves. They
yeah.
want to jump in and
yeah.
take a swim.
Generally, after we've had a frost, the algae is not such a problem.
Okay.
So, you know, carry always fresh water with them to give the dog. Carry extra food, maybe even some syrup or honey in case they get hypoglycemic. They go so hard. But, yeah, offer them fresh water every chance you get. Just take a gallon jug along.
Is this the time of year that you see a lot of dogs suffer from overheating or heat exhaustion?
Not with these temperatures.
Okay.
You know, a few years ago, we had a whole bunch of them that dropped dead when it was 85 degrees or something on opening day. It was just terrible. They just go so hard, they can't pace themselves.
That's what they're bred for.
Yep.
You know, they can't help it.
Yeah.
It's the time of the year. Everywhere you go, people are telling you to make sure and get a flu vaccination, get your flu shot. But what about our pets? Is there a vaccination for my dog or my cat?
Not for cat. There is vaccination for dog on the flu. We didn't, when I was young, we never were taught that dogs got flu. But then here about 8 years ago, at a dog track in Florida, some dogs showed up with a flu. And it was next door to a horse track. And they got to looking at the virus they isolated from these dogs, and it had avian, human, and horse genetics.
So had it jumped from each of those species?
It was a recombinant. It was a sort of a mutant type thing.
Wow.
And I guess about 3 years ago, Cook County in Illinois, there were over 800 dogs that died of flu.
Really?
So
is it a variant of the human variety then?
That's the original. I don't know what it is now,
okay.
but I know there's two different strains that they're dealing with.
There are vaccinations available.
There is a vaccine for it, yep. Not inexpensive, but more and more we board dogs from municipalities. We see that they've been vaccinated for a flu.
Every year they would have to have one?
Yep.
Wow, I didn't know that.
It's something new, and it surprised me.
So I guess a question begging to be asked is if you pet a dog that has influenza, can you then infect yourself with the variant that they have?
That's always the $64 question. And every winter, I get these dogs that come in with reasonably vague symptoms, but everybody in the family is snotting and snorting. And I ask, well, he got it first, and then she got it, and she gave it to him, and dad didn't get it, but mom got it.
So is the dog the vector, do you think?
I suspect not.
Okay.
That's my impression. But if you have a human origin in your genome, it's not impossible that you could infect a human being.
If you have a family dog, okay, and it's the only pet in the family, and he doesn't go to the dog park, he's not exposed to other dogs, in the process of this dog's life, what are the odds that he's going to contract an illness? Wouldn't you think that he'd have things that would be more genetic or maybe injurious pertaining to his health as far as catching something?
In general, I think that's true, Bob. The trouble we get into is we get people that have these dogs in hunt tests and field trials, and they may be in 7 or 8 different places.
All from all over.
200-300 dogs at each place. And you get such an exposure of all kinds of weird respiratory viruses, enteric viruses, stuff that you know, neither have a vaccine for or can particularly avoid.
If you have a lot of money invested in a champion dog, mm-hmm. I would think that you would want to make sure and ensure its health.
You bet.
Is there a standard that's required if you're going to have your dog participate in a dog show that, you know, you must present its record of immunization?
It depends on where you go, but okay. A lot of places there is.
They
have to be heartworm negative. They have to have a kennel cough. More and more, they have to have an influenza vaccine. They have to have distemper. They have to have rabies. You know, all the stuff that you normally get.
Well, I could see that, though. I mean, this just makes good sense. Don't you think so?
Once upon a time, I was at the State Fair in Springfield, Illinois, and I think they had a barn of 52 horses. And there wasn't a one of them that was well enough to run. They all had an upper respiratory virus. And I can't speak to the value of the horses, but there was a lot of money lost that day.
I would imagine. And, well, a little wager there, maybe.
Just couldn't run, you know.
Isn't that something, though?
Yeah. Wow. And that illustrates what happens when you get large numbers of animals from diverse sources in a common area with common ventilation and so on and so forth.
That makes good sense. Dr. Woody, we want to have a Halloween party for our friends and their pets. Any ideas how we can make our treats look Halloween-themed?
Well, there's several recipes out there for liver treats. And you can make a paste, and you can cut it up with a Halloween cookie cutter.
And bake it?
And bake it.
Sure.
And you can use, there's some stuffing that they use for the Kong toy. It's like easy cheese. It's poultry flavored, it's beef flavored, it's fish flavored. You can decorate the cookies that are liver treats with that stuff.
You just gave me an idea, a flash of brilliance. You and I are going to clean up with this one. This is the idea, Dr. Woody, that's going to do it. Doggy treats in a can, like pressurized cheese, you know? Wouldn't that, think about that, though.
It'd be easy to do.
Your husband would probably go for a snack one night and grab the wrong can, and that liver's kind of good, you know? Well, hey, stranger things have happened. We've got a walnut tree in our yard, and our dog is always chewing on those black walnuts. Is that okay? Should I be worried about poisons or toxins or anything else contained in those walnuts?
Walnuts get toxic, again, with a mycotoxin when they get that black, mushy, moldy layer on the outside. You know, the coat is green when it hits the ground, but then it turns black and it weakens and falls away. The squirrels have cleaned them all up at my house, but if you've got them lying around and they're black like that, if they get moldy, they can be toxic.
They all laid on top of Beth's car and turned her white car black.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. Good luck trying to scrub those things off. So best advice would be to tie your dog up, not underneath a tree like that.
Either that or rake up the nuts.
No. Or let the squirrels come.
Well, if you got enough squirrels.
There's plenty of those. You know, I've heard that dogs can suffer from extreme anxiety. When kids come to the door, ringing the doorbell with their Halloween costumes on, what can I do to help prevent my dog from being freaked out and miserable?
For a lot of dogs, that's such a trauma that we just give them tranquilizers. And you give them a tranquilizer, it lasts about 4 hours, and that generally solves the Halloween trick or treat.
Just don't screw up and pass those out for the Halloween treats. Kids will be sleeping on the back step. I know what where they're coming from, though, because my parents had those two little miniature dachshunds, and Halloween was. I mean, they're yappy anyway. Mm-hmm. And even though they put them downstairs in the basement, they'd hear the doorbell ring, and they'd start yapping right away. And it was, you know, and they were all excited.
Sure.
Sure. Poor old dogs, they get anxiety too.
Yeah.
You know, I know that fleas and ticks, the numbers were high, especially in the fall. Is it a good idea to give my cat another flea and tick treatment right now before the snow flies?
We haven't had a tick problem for quite some time, Bob. Generally, the hot weather inhibits ticks. So around the 1st of July, the ticks kind of peter out. And if you happen to get a real prolonged warm, unusually warm fall, sometimes you'll see a few back. But as a general rule, they're pretty much done by now. We are struggling this year. It's been such a bad flea year with people whose residences are infested with fleas. And again, that's an environmental problem. And I always say fleas are an environmental problem. The dog or the cat is just an intermediate source of nutrition. And if you're still having a problem with fleas in the house, by all means, go ahead and treat them. And treat them another month if you need to.
Is there a good product you would recommend?
Well, I hate to say this because I used it for a long time, but the Frontline has kind of quit working for us.
I've heard that.
And a couple of times a week, somebody's in our office that has been to Walmart and has bought Frontline that doesn't work.
Right.
We have some newer products. The more popular ones are the tablets. It's not a squirt on, it's just a tablet.
Is that a systemic treatment then for the...
Well, it becomes, you have to eat the tablet.
Yeah.
But they eat the tablet and the whole dog is protected. And people like it because it's not messy and it doesn't...
But what about all the eggs and nymphs and things hiding under the baseboard?
Well, this is what you have to deal with in the environment. You know, you have to vacuum and you may need a premise spray to deal with. And the other advantage... These products come out and they make all these nine claims. You know, it'll keep heartworms out and it'll cure your bald hair and all this stuff. But most of the time, part of that falls down. It won't kill ticks like it should or whatever it is. But we have a couple of them that are fairly effective at repelling both mosquitoes and flies. They're a stripe on. They're not a tablet. But for dogs that are outside a lot, people at camp every weekend, they find those products really beneficial.
There isn't some pre-mixed carpet shampoo you could buy that you could shampoo your carpeting with, and maybe that would help to kill some of the eggs?
We find the most effective way to deal with the environment is to vacuum everything you can vacuum. And that pulls up eggs and larvae from where they've been laid. If you can launder it, if it's a blanket or a rug they sleep on, launder it, that'll get rid of them. And if you can't, take it outside and burn it. And then we use a premise spray, and we have one that will kill eggs, larvae, pupa, and adults, and it has a seven-month residual.
So how do you apply it? Is it in a...
It's in a spray can. And
really?
One can will do 500 square feet, and all you have to put it on is where the animals spend most of their time. Like if it's under the bed or in the crevices of the couch or under the baseboard or wherever it is.
But what if the dog or cat has run of the whole house, every room?
You just have to make your best judgment.
Okay.
If you have a smooth floor, you're not going to have a problem if you get it cleaned. It's rugs and places that these creatures can hide.
So what about the length of the nap of the carpeting? You know, if you have like a shag carpet, does that offer more places for the eggs to hide and maybe more difficult to get out?
It makes it harder to get them out.
I just hate the thought of that. You know, sitting there.
It's horrible. These people get them in these mobile homes, and it's just a nightmare.
Is it true because a lot of times there's places for animals to crawl underneath? Yeah. They get access to through the skirting and things like that?
Yeah. You get a defect in the skirting, and the stray cats will get under there because it's warm. I had a person that said, I can just sit in my bathroom and watch the fleas crawling up the water pipe.
Oh, goodness.
It's impossible.
Yeah,
you can't do anything with that.
What would you do?
You just have to go in and exterminate underneath and seal everything up and put that skirting back.
And freezing won't kill them.
No, it's too warm under the trailer.
What about if you have, like, say, an outside dog sleeps in a pile of straw in the doghouse, has fleas, okay? So now you know that there are fleas in that straw.
Yep.
It gets really cold.
Yep.
Will they freeze?
No.
Boy, they're tough buggers,
huh? They are indeed. And you just take that out, and you clean all the crevices out and burn the straw.
You know, I've heard, I don't know if this is true or not, Dr. Woody, but I've heard people say that, you know, they've had fleas and they vacuum and vacuum and vacuum and they take the bag out and burn the bag.
That's a good idea. A lot of people have a bagless carpet vacuum now, so you just have to clean it out the best you can and try to get all the crevices and crannies. But the fewer eggs you have left, the fewer fleas there are going to hatch.
Sure,
I suppose that's true. For every flea you see, there are 19 others coming along.
Goodness gracious. So. They don't really have any natural enemies, like, do they? I mean, ants don't eat them or anything like that?
Not. Well, chickens will eat them if they can catch them, but they're hard to catch.
They're so small.
They jump so much.
Yeah.
They're so very small.
You know, I read that some of the old mountain men would be infested with fleas and also lice from cleaning and skinning animals and not bathing.
Yeah.
Come springtime, when the streams melted and they could take a bath, they'd take their clothes and put them in an ant pile, stir the ants up while they went and took a bath, and the ants would go and eat everything off their clothes.
Yeah. They'd eat the nits and the larvae, I'm sure. Yeah. Probably right.
So I'm saying just bypass the clothes and the shower altogether. Just lay yourself down. See how that works for you. Last week, I was doing some yard work in the back, raking up the leaves and trimming the flowers, and the whole time my dachshund was playing in the leaves and jumping in and out of them. Now, I'd noticed she hasn't been eating, and she has a runny nose. Is there something she was exposed to in the leaves that I should be concerned about?
Well, most likely, Bob, you're dealing with both pollens and dust, because leaves generate a lot of pollen, and if they're not completely dead when they drop, sometimes there can still be pollen on them. But I would imagine that this dog has just irritated its upper respiratory tract with irritating dust and pollens and so on and so forth, and the discharge is an effort to try to resolve that. And if you don't, you know, if you've not started to eat in a few days or a couple of days, you probably ought to get her looked at.
Have you ever heard of this? I don't know how left field this is, but I read about a guy that was doing some landscaping in his backyard and wanted to replace soil in the flower bed, and went and got bag after bag after bag of potting soil. Mm-hmm. Well, the potting soil, it's made by somebody that has a lawn care service that dumps all the leaves and grass clippings. Well, he'd gotten the grass clippings from a golf course. Mm-hmm. The golf course uses a lot of spray. And so the residual that was in this potting soil was toxic to his cat that was out there digging in it. She got sick, and they couldn't figure out what it was. And finally he thought, well, you know, she started acting that way about the time that we put in this rock garden thing. And they tested it, and sure enough, it had like 2,4-D, I think, in it, a really high level.
Yeah. That wouldn't be a surprise, Bob. You know, a lot of that stuff is when there's a normal mulch or you know, that compost-type pile, the heat goes up. But a lot of that stuff is not terribly sensitive to heat, and cats are extremely sensitive to organophosphates. They say if you remember the old workbenches out in the barn, if you spill something on that, and even once it's dry, a cat can walk through it and get enough through its paws to make it sick.
Isn't that something?
So they're very, very sensitive to organophosphates.
But it makes me concerned to think, well, you know, Beth's going to go and repot some of her plants with some potting soil. Now you're bringing this stuff in the house, and it's, you know, it's off-gassing, and you've got little grandkids running around, and so there's a concern, too. So that's just...
Well, one of the things, I had a guy once that bought about 500,000 tons of sludge from the Chicago Sanitary District, and he had it shipped down the Illinois River in barges, and he spread it on his fields. And I thought to myself, you know, this is probably swell, except for all the mercury
the
and all
heavy
the other
metal.
Heavy metals
yeah.
and crud that's in it. And I kept holding my breath for these old cows to start coming down, but they never did. And whether they just weren't on it or whether it wasn't in there in high enough concentrations, I don't know. But I know that some states have enacted restrictions about putting that on as a soil amendment because they're concerned about heavy metal and other toxin released to the streams.
They have incineration places that do that, and they also extract silver nitrate that collects. And also there's a trace of gold.
Oh, there's all kinds of stuff. Manganese, molybdenum.
I know, it surprises the person.
Lead. Yeah, it's amazing what comes out.
And you put it on the soil, and now it's been introduced now into the whole ecosystem again. So
into your food system.
Yeah. Our last question, Dr. Woody. My cat's been gaining a lot of weight recently. I think she might be pregnant. What should I do?
I'll call up all your friends and see who they really are.
Pet her stomach and look for heads.
Just give her decent nutrition, keep her safe, and 63 days gestation, you'll know.
Have a little basket under the bed.
You bet.
And again, our website, Dr. Woody, brookingsanimalclinic.com, one word, small case letters. You can check it out. And there's all, I looked last week. You have all kinds of really great, helpful advice on
good.
There. Well, folks, want to get a hold of you, the best way is how?
Give us a call, 692-2815.
And you can stop by.
420 12th Street South.
It's a pleasure, as always, Dr. Woody.
Bob.
Take care. Talk in a couple of weeks, okay?
Okay.
And that's the wrap for me.